It's time to kick back and grab a beer, because the space cadets are here. Talking about space and the universe, let's all be giant science nerds. We're the space cadets, yeah, we're the space cadets.
Welcome back to episode 4 of the Space Cadets podcast. Today we're going to change things up a little bit. We've all come to the table with our favorite sci-fi space-related movies. And what we're going to do is start to investigate the science behind them, start to think a little bit about what makes them real, what makes them a bit more far-fetched than maybe the directors or the creators would have originally thought. But before we go into all these movies, why don't we take a moment to introduce our newest space cadet on the show, Mr. Rob. Rob, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Todd? Thanks for having me. I am a quantitative trading headhunter by day and a overly enthusiastic alien hunter by night.
Very cool. Do you think aliens would have any use for high quantity, high frequency trading?
I'll touch on that a little bit later as we get into the movie I'm about to discuss.
All right. Awesome. Well, I think what we're going to do, the way this is going to be formatted, is we're going to go around the horn. Everybody picked out a movie that we're going to then, as a group, sort of discuss and dissect. To start us off is Mr. Will, a space cadet from our last couple episodes. Will brought to the table probably one of the more realistic movies, but I think everything's got some stuff that you can poke some holes into. So, Will, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Todd. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course, of course. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the movie you chose?
Yeah, so, I mean, the decision was pretty easy for me when you asked what our favorite space movie is, and I chose Apollo 13, right? But Apollo 13 really stood out to me for a couple of reasons. Is it's, like you said, it's just kind of a standalone movie in that it's authentic and realistic and very much true to the actual story of what occurred in real life. But throughout the entire film, it's just one thing after another that the crew and the NASA organization has to overcome, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat, and it's a great example of all the different individuals that make up the NASA organization and created the space program that we know today, and all the different individual things that went on throughout the movie, from the challenges they had to overcome, from obviously them getting there. They were supposed to fly, or Tom Hanks and his crew were supposed to fly on one of the later shuttles, and they got bumped up because somebody had the measles. And then obviously the explosion of the oxygen tanks while they're in flight to the moon to replace and fabricate some sort of CO2 filter to help them filter out the CO2 and have enough oxygen to the batteries. They had to, turn everything off because they were losing battery power, and then restart the ignition process and have enough amperage to turn everything on in a particular order, and then going into re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, the heat shield is cracked, and the parachutes were concerned that they're frozen up. So it's just, it was one thing after another, and the whole movie, they're overcoming these challenges, and it was just it was great to watch, almost a real life example of how they all came together to overcome it and bring these people back. Fantastic movie, I'm sure everyone can agree, and it's kind of why I selected it.
Yeah, man, it's certainly one of the classics out there, and pretty realistic, when you think about all the stuff that they went through and all the preparations. I mean, compared to some of the other movies that I think we're discussing tonight, it's one of the more realistic ones. Just something that's sort of on topic with what's happening today. Today we're in Game 7 of the World Series. There was one part in the movie where they show an Astros player, Houston Astros player, Jimmy Winn, and the Astros are obviously in the World Series today, hitting a home run, which they were playing against Cincinnati at Cincinnati's Crowley Field. And that home run, they say in the movie, was the longest home run in that field's history. And one of the fun facts, and just because the World Series is happening today, is the Astros actually played, when this disaster happened, actually played the LA Dodgers on that day. But it's pertinent to what's going on in the world today. For everybody else on the call, what did you guys think about Apollo 13? Anything that you noticed about it, or realism-wise, or any points you'd want to make?
I think it's just a huge part of Americana, right? I'm not sure about you guys, but it's about national pride. It's about getting to the moon. I remember growing up and just they weren't superheroes, but it was. I think I viewed it that way watching the movie, because this actually you know, all happened by, you know, real people as normal as, you know, you and me. The contribution to American culture, I think, is very big too.
You know, obviously Hollywood likes to spool things up and make things maybe a little bit more serious than they really are. Obviously, anything that happens that's not planned in space is pretty serious. In the movie, they take a nylon stocking and they fabricate an air filter to help repair the damage because they're getting that CO2 was just filling up the cabin they were in.
Yeah, so there's actually a poorly designed use case. The lunar module, which obviously they had to travel in to return to Earth, and then they had the shuttle, which took them there. And so there's two different ships that they're traveling in, and the lunar module is designed for only two people. And the shuttles, which they weren't able to travel in through their journey, was designed for three. And they had filters. They had to increase the size of their filter for the lunar module, which was holding the three of them, obviously designed for two. And so they had to fabricate this design, which one filter was square and one filter was round. And I don't know how factual this was, but I know there are some instances of this where they had to create this kind of enclosure around the filter so that the filters can connect and basically fit a round peg in a square hole for all intents and purposes.
It's amazing. I in doing some research, I found that in the real scenario, thankfully, they had actually planned for a similar error to take place. And they solved it very similarly, right? They used an onboard vacuum cleaner, believe it or not, some plastic bags. And I won't pretend like I know specifically what this is, but a lithium hydroxide cartridge to build a filter to turn that CO2 back into breathable oxygen.
Yeah, for sure. There's a little bit of Hollywoodification, if you will, of the movie. When you look up like how factual was Apollo 13, I think one of the most frequently cited things is that no one ever said, "Houston, we have a problem," right? And that was one of the big quotes that came out of the movie, and everyone knows that quote from that movie. But that was never actually said. There's a couple other things that are inaccuracies, like you mentioned before, but for the most part, it was really true to story.
Yeah, I think the actual line was, "Houston, we've had a problem," in the past tense. And I read an interview that said that Tom Hanks actually requested to change it to, "We have a problem," in the present tense, in order to convey a little bit more urgency. So, well, very cool, Will. Thank you for talking a little bit about Apollo 13. Sean, why don't we pivot and talk about your movie?
Well, you know, this is probably the most factual movie out of the four, Todd. We are a day before Halloween, so why not talk about my favorite horror space movie? That would be Event Horizon.
Ooh, good choice. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure who else has seen this yet. If you haven't, please, after the podcast, go and watch and put the blanket over, turn the lights on, and get ready for a good time. So it's essentially, think The Shining and Amityville Horror in space is I guess how, you know, they want to phrase it. And so basically Event Horizon is, there's this ship, and the thought of it is that the Event Horizon, not that it would go faster than light, but given the name Event Horizon with black holes, that anything close to the middle of the black hole would get sucked in, and in that moment be faster than the speed of light, and kind of go on to the other side and bring you to another dimension. The way Sam O'Neill, who's the one of the protagonists in the movie, explains it is folding a piece of paper in half where a hole is and put like a pen through. So that's the way to get to another dimension. And so the U.S. government or the world put all this money into it, and 7 years later, there was no crew, there's no ship, and then all of a sudden there's a distress signal outside of Neptune that it had returned. And so it's this crew, it's a rescue crew, top secret, to see what happened, to see if anyone's still alive, to get this ship back, which, you know, probably billions and billions of dollars, trillions, I don't even know, quantify that money. But that dimension turns out not to be another dimension, but maybe hell. And the ship is alive, one might say, and is trying to get the crew to bring it back to the evil dimension. Not giving away too much of the movie, some members die, but maybe then that happens. There's some some gouging, there's some slashing. So I don't really think we should, there's a lot to poke holes in, both from a, I guess, cinematography and a plot, but I hope there's not a, a spaceship that could bring you to hell. I'm going to poke a hole into that and say that's not possible. But I think it would be interesting to think what the group thinks of, I guess, the science of an event horizon.
So, Sean, I think it's funny that you said that, you know, it's a completely sci-fi movie, and it is. And I love this movie. I'm a huge Sam Neill fan. I Lawrence Fishburne's in this also. I think it's a great sci-fi flick. It's certainly completely far-fetched. But what's ironic is the mathematics, right? The geometry needed to build this device. So what he's talking about is not teleportation in the sense that we like to think about it, which is, I will myself from this location to this location. Instead, what he's talking about with the ship, with the event horizon, is how can we manipulate space and time? The example you gave, take that sheet of paper and fold it in half. And if you had a point on one side and a point on the other, you're now bringing these pieces together. It's the concept of moving the room rather than moving the items across the room. And what's cool about that is we actually do have the mathematics built out. The theory of general relativity solves for this. Newton's gravity equation solve for this. We know if we had all the right stuff, exactly how to put it together to get us from point A to point B. Now, the flaw here, or the problem, is that we don't have that stuff. So some people think of that as dark energy or dark matter, or just something with enough gravitational influence that would give the ability to actually warp and bend space-time in that particular manner. But in terms of you know, sci-fi flicks that on the surface seem completely unrealistic, yeah, the religious overtones and the portal to hell and, you know, a lot of the gothic sort of styling of the ship and that sort of thing, sure, that's a lot of creative license. But I love this movie because the science of how they would actually do this is totally rooted in reality.
As you could probably guess, I will not be watching this movie.
a quick side note to the listeners, Will is a huge scaredy cat.
Don't let that deep voice fool you. Let's pivot. If there's one thing that everybody likes, especially with a prolific series, it's a prequel. So I want to talk a little bit about the movie that you chose, Nathan.
Definitely. So Prometheus, like you mentioned, it's a prequel to the Alien movies. Came out in 2012. So it's got this incredible notion, but it talks about how we advance our technology as a species, and that helps us get closer to first contact with aliens. And so that's what happens. There's interaction with aliens in this movie, and it starts out optimistic, and then it goes horribly wrong. It features a remnant military base of an alien species, which they call the Engineers in the movie. It gets explored by a bunch of Earthlings backed by the billionaire Peter Whalen, that's played by Guy Pearce. And they explore this alien technology. He wants to find a cure because he's really old and sick. And he thinks the alien technology might be able to extend his life. And then you have some amazing actors in there. Michael Fassbender playing the droid David, Idris Elba as Captain Janik, and Charlize Theron as Meredith Vickers. So really exciting movie and a bunch of great technology in there. So you got starships, auto-surgical pods, lifelike androids, and bioweapons. So I give this movie an A for enjoyment, A for ambition, and B for technological realism, but just wondering what other people thought.
What do you think about the overtones of this movie, Nate? One of the things that I thought about when I watched is it really forces you to think a little bit about the idea of evolution versus creation, or probably even more than that, intelligent design by some other civilization versus like a creator, right? Because I think whenever you hear about intelligent design, you think about, oh, God made these people. And there's obviously the heated debate of religion versus science. But what I loved about this movie is that it really pulled in a lot of those different components, whether it's, you know, evolution, Darwinism, creationism, intelligent design. What did you think about that stuff?
Yeah, so I think with what's often the case is, I mean, just look at the name. Prometheus, it's a Greek mythological reference. The guy went up to get fire, bring it to humankind, was punished for that. Or if you think about Icarus, who flew too close to the sun, wings melted and fell back to Earth. So in this case, humans, like we're apt to do, going after technology maybe that we shouldn't have, really Luddite angle, and then just meeting this dark fate up in space. So I think I like the movie because you have philosophy intertwined with the darkness that's just inherent in the Alien series of movies. Like we mentioned, this is a prequel to that. So I'd highly recommend it if people haven't seen it.
What was cool about it also is that it tells sort of a complete story, I thought. For example, when you mentioned David, the cyborg, there's a whole subplot there where he's trying to find himself throughout the movie. Without giving away too much, it's pretty incredible. You know, he follows this path of the subordinate cyborg all the way through to call him a sentient being towards the end, where he has his own sort of agenda. And if you think about what the movie starts as, it's human life or life in general being created by these engineers, and then our search as a civilization to find our creator, right? And to understand it enough that we can overcome it and we can become our own sense of quote unquote sentience, right? And so I think what's cool about the way the directors handled this movie is that they focused that entire plot of the movie in the character arc of David.
Yeah, and he actually ends up in that movie as a head chopped off from a body in a bag.
Again, spoiler alert.
So the thing is, it's Michael Fassbender, right? So you're really excited. He's doing a wonderful job. He's a super creepy droid. So he's like great looking, smart, fast, perfect athlete, knows every language, knows the lines of every single movie. But there's just something missing about him. And it's like the same with all the Alien movies. These droids are really sophisticated, but they're lacking a soul. Maybe just for the mill of another episode, but robots in space, you got to be careful.
I think the point you were trying to make, though, that is interesting, is just that it's humans creator searching for their creator or not aware that it's them. Meanwhile, Michael Fassbender is with his own creators as well. And so it's like a creator inception almost. Like it's within another one. So I think it's the, you know, dichotomy, right? They don't even notice that. So I thought that was, I agree. I think that's really interesting and a cool thing that the movie did.
Rob, I wanted to save you for last with your movie as our newest cadet on the show. God, I have so much to say about this movie, but I'm going to toss it over to you to tell us a little bit about what you've chosen for tonight's discussion.
All right, so I went with one of the classics, Independence Day. If I could summarize Independence Day in 20 seconds, a big alien ship comes towards the Earth, fighter pilots are scrambled. They can't do anything. They figure out that they can upload a virus to the mothership by using an old rundown spaceship. They get the virus into the mothership. They run away quickly. The shields go down. They defeat the mothership and everyone is happy.
First of all, I love this movie. It is a cultural staple in Americana, really, I guess, global Kana, although the I like when they go around the horn and they start telling all the other nations that the Americans are going to lead the charge. They figured it all out. But going back to the science of this, dude, there are so many holes you could poke in this movie, starting with the fact that NASA's Planetary Defense Office is currently tracking 19,000 near-Earth objects, right? And their cutoff, their size cutoff for how small something can be before they stop tracking it is 460 feet. These things were 15 miles in diameter, 15 miles, and they didn't see it coming.
There are so many flaws in this movie. It's pretty comical, which is why I think this is a great blend of a action and comedy when you actually analyze it. But you know, the sheer fact that they don't realize it's coming, I think the radio signals are picked up when it's roughly 375,000 kilometers away. As the first sample of any sort of radioactivity out there is just a little concerning. Not even to mention the fact that when they pull up to Area 51, there's a 5x5 guard shack with two guys that just allow a pickup truck with a Halloween costume in the bed of it to get
access.
What
about what about the when they have the alien in custody halfway through the movie and they're gonna dissect it? The one guy says to the other guy, is this room secure? And the guy says, yes. They start dissecting this alien. And then the alien wakes up, goes crazy, starts possessing the guy. And then the dude's outside with guns They're like, let's get him out. Yeah. And then they shoot through the glass. So it wasn't even bulletproof glass. But yeah, that thing was pretty secure against the alien forces. That was going to do the job.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other part that's pretty funny is you would think that something so sophisticated as the mothership coming out, the coordination from all the little attacker ships going around the globe, taking down all these major cities, that they wouldn't be able to put together some sort of communication device in order for them to coordinate that synced attack. They have to use our satellites in order to actually get that going.
I don't know, man. They don't seem that smart. They were fooled by Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith because they closed the shades on the spacecraft.
Yes, exactly.
What about the face punch?
Oh yeah, that was good. That was a very realistic part, actually, though. Because I think,
like, isn't it wearing its exoskeleton at that point?
Yeah.
So he punches it out with the suit on.
Dude, a knight used to get knocked out when people would get hit in their knight face mask.
That's a good analogy.
I don't know if it really is, but it's the only thing. I'm trying to, for a movie I love poking holes in, it's
yeah, man. Will Smith's punch is like a joust.
So nothing though compares to the biggest flaw in this movie, which was that they were able to hook up an Earth laptop to an alien spaceship, and in 1996. In 1996, first of all, it was a Macintosh computer. If you rewatch the movie, Mac was like falling. Right, this was not the high point for Macintosh. They were able to install a virus
via a USB port, no less.
Right, that we had the ability. You see a wire going into it that they just happen to have that same port. But Mac OS back in 1996 was the least compatible operating system that was available commercially to buy. You couldn't
least
buy
compatible for humans, Todd.
Well, maybe that was the problem. Maybe Steve Jobs was an alien. Dude, that's what it was.
Boom.
Sean, great call out. That's it. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Why were they coming to Earth again in the first place?
They harvest all the neighboring planets. And so they take all the resources, and once they are all depleted, they moved on to a new one.
Kindly chime in. Houston, they've had a problem. It is now 3-2 Washington Nationals. They took the lead. They had 2-0, and in the seventh inning, two home runs. It's 3-2.
You got the Goddard Space Station right now blowing up, I'm sure, going crazy. Well, listen, we reviewed those four different movies. I thought it would be fun to rank them in order of scientific accuracy. I've taken a stab at this with some little cliff notes that I want to read to you, and you guys tell me if you agree or disagree. All right? Do you want me to start at the most accurate or most inaccurate?
Let's go with the most inaccurate to start.
Okay, well, I think you're going to know what I'm going to pick. Independence Day wins my choice as the most scientifically inaccurate movie that we've discussed.
It has the best speech by Bill Pullman.
100%. I was once at a wedding and heard somebody give that as the wedding speech.
That is epic. I have to see a video of that.
Like a best man speech. So scientifically inaccurate to a fault. There is not one bit of this movie which portrays what an actual invasion scenario would be like. One thing, we didn't even mention the fact that the aliens all just happened to hover over our, the Empire State Building or the White House. They just knew where that stuff was.
Well, we did learn a few things, though. There's some sort of takeaway, right? Aliens wear seatbelts in their spacecrafts. We saw that. Well, you would also know that strip clubs are open when aliens are attacking the world, as you would know that Will Smith's girlfriend is working that night. And you would know that you always recycle Coke cans even when you've shot at them.
All right, good points, Rob. Good points. Your movie is saved. Number three for the second to last in accuracy. I'm going to give that one to Prometheus. Conceptually.
What?
Yeah, conceptually, whether through organic or intentional creation, life began through processes deep in our universe and evolved to what we have today. Whether that's through stars or some type of intelligent design, I'm leaning more towards the stars, but I can't discredit the accuracy, even if it's not proven accuracy, of what that movie portrays there. So I put that one in third place. The reason that the next one, Event Horizon, gets my pick as number two is the plot is completely far-fetched, right? Plot is completely far-fetched. But the science behind the wormhole machine, while crazy, is rooted in scientifically proven theories and could be performed if we had those right materials. And for that reason, I give that one a second place finish just because the machine itself is something that's scientifically possible. And that means that finishing at number one is Apollo 13, everybody's favorite, accurate depiction of events of the Apollo 13 mission, minor inconsistencies that only a movie snob would care about. And to the real event, those inconsistencies are completely irrelevant. Who cares who hit that home run and how far it was and what team it was against and in what stadium? Those guys are American heroes. They made it around the moon and back, didn't land there, but you know what? We got those astronauts with us. All right, guys, before we sign off officially today on this episode of the podcast, I would be remiss not to hand out a Space Cadet Award. For that award, I think we're going to put that in line with our most scientifically accurate movie. Would everybody please give a nice round of applause to our Space Cadet winning the Space Award today, Mr. William.
Thanks, guys. I just want to say thank you to my fans, my family,
nice,
and everybody who got me here. It's been a long road, but I appreciate all the help.
Box office numbers don't lie. Independence Day all the way.
All right. Send us off with your favorite quote from the movie Independence Day.
We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.